Shohei Ohtani has spoken. We are speaking with a crisis management expert on how this whole thing has been handled. Plus, the NFL owners are in Orlando making some significant changes to the game on the field and off the field. And the Baltimore Orioles will open the season with a new controlling owner. It's Tuesday, March 26th. I'm Owen Poindexter, and this is Front Office Sports Today. The NFL owners are in Orlando deciding the future of the league. Joining me now to discuss is freelance writer Dan Kaplan. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you back on. So my X feed, my Twitter feed is awash in people complaining about the hip drop swivel tackle rule. They're banning.
Don't forget the swivel part.
Right. Yeah. The swivel is important. And I'm sure there's going to be, frame by frame discussions of like, did he swivel or not? Anyway, what's the story from Orlando about that?
Well, the first thing to note is the Players Association is against this new rule. The rule passed unanimously. So management and players are on opposite ends of this. It's sort of, I don't want to call it funny, but here they are. This is a player health and safety rule that the players are against and the owners are for. And then we've come off a period where there's been arguments about turf and grass, where the owners are like, there's no difference between grass and turf. And the players say, if you care about our health and safety, you do all grass. And now the owners say, well, there's you have a 40 times more likely chance to get injured on a hip drop swivel tackle than any other tackle. And the players say, you can't take it out of the game. So it gets confusing at times to see who's on what side of this health and safety issue.
Yeah. And I mean, I bet we'll see a lot of calls on this in the early going next season and maybe a lot more offense. I mean, we'll have to see, but offense was down last year. I wonder if the owners see that as an extra motivation too, in addition to the health and safety stuff.
I'm not sure it was an extra motivation, but it certainly helps because the NFL was not pleased that scoring was down last season. Their sweet spot is about 45 points. And I think it was like 43.5 points a game this year. So that's below where they want it.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Also, no votes expected on this, I understand, but private equity is in the air there.
Yeah. The NFL is the only one of the big sports leagues in the U.S. that doesn't accept private equity. The NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, all accept private equity investors on a minority basis. Private equity can't own a team, but they can invest up to 20% given a league threshold level. The NFL so far has said no private equity. It's not part of their structure. There's been a push to have private equity in the NFL because of the rise in franchise values. Some thought it would be voted on here. It does not appear that will be the case, but owners were just in a meeting where only owners were allowed and they were expected to discuss private equity. I don't expect there to be a vote on that at this meeting, which ends tomorrow.
Yeah, it feels like it has to happen at some point just because we're getting to the point where you can count on your fingers how many people can afford an NFL team right now, given all the rules they have.
Josh Harris, who owns the Washington Commanders, struggled to put together the $6 billion package to buy the Commanders. He's a hedge and equity fund billionaire. There was a minority stake in the Miami Dolphins that was marketed. There was almost an agreement with Ken Griffin, the hedge fund manager, that valued the team at $7.5 billion, according to Puck. If that's the true valuation, then yeah, the number of people who are going to be able to afford this goes down even more. So there's ways the NFL can do that without private equity. They can increase the amount of debt a team can have. They can increase the number of investors that can own a team. Right now it's 25. They could expand that to 50. They probably don't want to do that, but there are other ways to go at this problem without accepting private equity. But it'd be a lot easier just to be able to accept $1 billion in private equity.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Also on the agenda, the NFL wants to continue to expand internationally, increasing those team values even more. What's the story with that?
Well, we know the NFL is playing a lot of games overseas. Beginning in 2025, they'll play as many as 8 games a season, actually a minimum of 8 games a season. overseas. They also have this program where teams can market in individual countries. So the Carolina Panthers can do what they do in their own market in Germany, for example. They've claimed Germany as an international market. The news today was four new teams. Four new teams joining the international program, and that makes 25. And five new countries, Japan, South Korea, Argentina, Colombia, and Nigeria, are now countries that NFL teams will market in. And this means they can use their intellectual property, the logo of the team, to sell for sponsorships, licensing, merchandise. They can do team events, they can do fan events, organize flag football, which is a big initiative of the league. Some teams take it much more seriously than others. The Kansas City Chiefs spend over seven figures in marketing in Germany. But some teams just, you know, do fan forums, things like that. It's all over the map with these 25 teams that do it or will be doing it. But it's a signal that the NFL recognizes that the domestic market only has so much more room to grow, and that the true growth long-term will come internationally.
Dan Kaplan from an Orlando hotel lobby, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
David Rubenstein, a co-founder and co-chairman of the private equity firm The Carlyle Group, is set to take control of the Baltimore Orioles once the other MLB owners vote to approve him. Barring something unexpected, opening day on Thursday will be Rubenstein's first full day at the helm. The team's previous owner, Peter Angelos, who bought the Orioles in 1993, passed away on Saturday. That was a triggering event for the transaction because the two sides were delaying the full sale for tax purposes until Angelos' death. Rubenstein is on track to own a 70% stake in the team at a valuation of $1.725 billion. The incoming ownership group also includes Orioles legend Cal Ripken, Michael Bloomberg, and the CEO of investment firm Ares Management, Mike Arrighetti. The purchase includes the Orioles' piece of their regional sports network, Masson, which has been a point of contention with the Washington Nationals, who share Masson but get less revenue from it as part of the deal that allowed the Nats to move into the Orioles' territory. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred has said that the change in ownership could create an opportunity to resolve some legal issues around that deal. Should that happen, the Nationals might look to put themselves back on the market. The team had been for sale until February when its principal owner, Mark Lerner, said he was keeping the Nats for now. With America's hunger for football at an all-time high, networks are making room in their schedules for it anywhere they can. For the first time, both Ohio State and Michigan spring games will be nationally televised on Fox. ESPN is putting the Alabama spring game on its flagship network, with the rest of its spring game broadcasts on ESPN Plus or conference networks. In the meantime, we'll get a look at whether a different entity can tap into America's love of football during the NFL and college football offseason. The United Football League begins its inaugural season on Saturday. The UFL is the result of the merger between the XFL and USFL. It has eight teams, several of which are located in college football epicenters like Houston, Alabama, and Michigan. As long as football is the most popular media product in America, people will keep trying to extend its dominance into spring. Before we get going, remember to rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, screenshot your review, and send it to me at owen@frontofficesports.com, and we may send you a free Front Office Sports hat. We are giving one away every day of March Madness. Thanks so much for everyone who has already done so. You've got it made in the shade. Up next, Shohei Ohtani delivered a prepared statement to the press yesterday afternoon in which he stated that he was lied to and stolen from by his former translator, Ipe Mizuhara. I spoke with crisis management expert Mike Paul on how Ohtani and his representatives have handled the situation and how much of this was preventable. That conversation is coming up next.
It's been a tough week for fans and team officials, and I'm very grateful that the media has been patient in this process. Just on a personal note, I'm very saddened and shocked that someone who I'm trusted has done this.
これがそこまでの流れなので、僕はもちろんスポーツ賭博にはもちろん関与していないですし、ブックメーカーにさっきも言いましたけど送金をしていたという事実は全く、ありません。
So, you know, in conclusion, I do want to make it clear that I never betted on sports or have willfully sent money to the bookmaker.
All right. I am joined now by the president and CEO of Reputation Doctor LLC, Mike Paul. Welcome, Mike.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on this day. So we have just watched or listened to the press conference given by Shohei Ohtani and his new interpreter, Will Ireton. They called it a press conference. Really, he just came out, read a prepared statement, which was translated by the translator, and took no questions. What did you make of that decision to call it a press conference, but and you know gather all this media here, but not actually take any questions?
Well, we realized why it was controlled because there were serious legal allegations that are forthcoming. Because of that, the lawyers really were involved with the strategy for the press conference today. Still considered a press conference because the press showed up. It was one way. It was a message, 11-minute message, quite long, but in hearing it, every piece of it was needed.
And yeah, in terms of every piece being needed, what would you say Ohtani laid out? What were the key pieces for you?
Well, the first piece was, I didn't know about this. The second piece was, this is serious, and he lied to everybody. The third piece is, yes, my money was used, but I didn't give permission to use my money. And upon hearing so, I told all my representatives. Sounds like his professional agent and managers first, the team second, and third, the lawyers. And then the lawyers said, okay, we're in charge now. I think the control variable of what this was set up to be had the media at first thinking, come on, man, why is it so controlled? Once they heard the message within the first 3 minutes, they said, hey, this is a legal press conference. This isn't a typical situation. There's some serious laws that have allegations of breach here, and we need to take this very seriously.
Yeah, and Ohtani is saying that his former translator, Ipe Mizuhara, first of all, stole at least $4.5 million to pay off gambling debts, lied about that to Ohtani, to his representatives, crafted this other story that said Ohtani paid off those debts. Is Ohtani basically putting his entire career on that being true? Like, if it somehow comes out that some part of that story is false, the one that Ohtani just painted, what level of damage are we talking about here?
Well, I hope that he has been counseled both by the top experts in the court of law and those that deal with branding and reputation to analyze it from exactly that perspective. If this isn't true, this is a major, major problem for not just your career, but your brand and reputation for the rest of your life. They must have enough information to prove, for example, on what dates and at what time he went online and transferred money. You and I know that in the United States alone, let alone internationally, when you perhaps wired money from one state to another or further, that includes federal law, which is a major, major penalty, and it could be international law. The other thing that was interesting about this press conference is that we learned that its origins started in Korea. Now, why is that important? We discussed earlier that when you're a star, a franchise star of this magnitude, he's not just from LA. He's not just from the United States. He's a global figure. The story is going to be even bigger in Korea than it is here, I predict. And it's important for the legal team as well as the public relations and branding teams to keep on top of every twist and turn that's going to be involved here. He made clear that he's looking for separation and a line of demarcation and a boundary between this issue, which is now going to be handled by his attorneys, and he's going to focus on the game. I think that was very smart. If I had to grade this press conference, this controlled press conference, without knowing the details of it being an alleged crime, I would have given it a lower grade. But because we know that it is an alleged crime, a very serious crime, I would give it an A.
Okay. Oh. And for this kind of thing, who needs to be all on the same page? I mean, certainly Ohtani, the Dodgers, his lawyers. Who else do you bring into that inner circle of making sure everyone's lined up before they go public with something like this?
Well, he's got a union. He's got the front office of the league. He's got his representatives in the United States. He's got his representatives back in Japan. He has a number of different sponsor relationships. He's got family. He's got others that are, you know, business relationships external to sponsorships. There's a lot of pieces. They call him a franchise for a reason. And he will have more responsibility and more stakeholders than the average professional athlete. That's what comes along with that moniker.
Backing up a little bit here, basically when this story broke, we already had two conflicting versions. There was the, what, you know, I can now, I guess, define as the Ipe narrative of, I racked up this debt, Ohtani paid it off. And then the version that came out a little bit later, which was, Ipe racked up the debt and then stole the money from Ohtani. What's the failure there to have these two versions come out so quickly? I mean, and is it, can we just say, well, Ipe lied, or should something have been caught before that even happened?
So I believe that's the most compelling part of analyzing this situation and this scandal and this incident. It deals with the translation of information and communication. He also said during his 11 minutes that when Ipe was asked the question to explain what had happened, he didn't translate that for him. And I find that fascinating. It's the reason why we had two different answers. One that was from the translator, and now one that's from him. The truth versus the lies. And someone manipulating and taking advantage of your inability to speak English to communicate one message to some and another to you. Yeah. It's fascinating.
Yeah, one of the more gobsmacking details that's come out about this was that first it was reported that Ohtani was with the Ipe narrative of, yes, I paid off those debts. And it's, you know, and we still don't know for sure if this was true, but then it was reported that the explanation for that was, well, because that information was coming from Ipe, who was translating for Ohtani. So at some point, don't you bring in another translator?
And to that point, now we get introduced to a new translator.
Right.
A seasoned translator. A translator that's worked with others. Others within the league. Their league and team relationships external to this. It sounds like, let's hope, properly vetted, and they picked the right guy. The kind of guy who can go through storms like this, because hopefully the, not just the translation relationship, not just the buddy relationship, but the ethics and the morality and decision making that's tied to a franchise player has now hopefully been properly vetted. And the converse of that is Ipe, obviously, based on what we know today, certainly wasn't vetted properly. I don't even need to say that that was an allegation. Because if he was properly vetted, someone would have learned that he likes to gamble. And that obviously did not come up, at least from what we know today, in any vetting of any kind. The story has legs. We're going to learn more about the types of things he likes to bet on, how much he's been betting, when did he first start betting. And I think it's going to be fascinating for us to continue to peel back that onion and see how far it goes.
And before we let you go, I just wanted to get your take on a, I don't know if this is a crisis. We'll find out if it's a crisis. LSU coach Kim Mulkey, she's anticipating some article in the Washington Post. We don't know what it is because it hasn't been published yet, but she's come out swinging saying, you know, this person's, you know, basically making stuff up about me. She's gone on offense against the reporter before the article comes out. Is that ever a good idea?
Well, let's say a couple more points. Because she's looked up this reporter and she believed that there was a hit job against another coach that was associated with the university, and the juxtaposition was between the salary of the coach versus the average person living in a poorer area, a more minority area of the country. Look, if she were my client, I'd say things like this. Those types of stories, if you do further research, happen all the time. They ask it of CEOs. They ask it of celebrities. They ask it of all types of people. By the way, almost every rich area of the country has a poor area not far away. So calm down about that. Let's focus on why you're worth it, why you're a great coach, and the good relationships you have with your players. I believe she has some concerns about her relationships also with her previous players, including one that ended up going abroad and ended up in jail. A marquee player now as well. And the article hasn't come out yet. All of this was supposedly to have a proactive strike, a preemptive strike towards something that was coming out. She caused the crisis. She caused the attention. Now everyone wants to read the article to find out what the heck is going to be in it. You made it worse, not better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's my attitude. Is like, I might have read it before. Now I'm definitely going to read it. Mike Paul, really enjoyed the chat. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Hopefully I'll see you again soon.
That's it for today. Don't forget to review us on Apple and send a screenshot to Owen@frontofficesports.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.